Peter Taylor has been reporting in Northern Ireland for 40 years. He's made 100 documentaries about the Troubles. And in his latest programme, he asks who won the war. Earlier, we heard that Peter thinks Unionists won, but there might be a United Ireland in the future. So the programme goes out Monday, BBC One, 9 p.m. We're going to play you now the interview with Peter. As you've been hearing today, he gives his own opinion on the outcome of the Troubles. Giving an opinion is normally a big no for BBC journalists. So I started off by asking Peter about that.
When I was asked if I would be interested in making this programme, I said, in principle, yes, but what would it entail? And they said they wanted it to be a personal account, an authored programme, in which... In the end, I drew my own conclusion on who won the war and drew my own conclusions on the elements that went up to the result of who won the war, and to express an opinion, which I was, I was happy to do. And although, you know, my conclusion at the end of the programme is qualified because nobody can actually predict accurately the future, I think that when it came to the question, you know, has violence paid? It was, you know, a difficult area to address. I was slightly uncomfortable initially at addressing it because it is so controversial. But in the end, I was asked to give my own view, and that that is my own view, which is not a view which is popular, and quite rightly not popular, in a democratic society. But if one is trying to give a true account of what happened over these astonishing and difficult and tragic, 45 years, I think one has to be honest and say what one believes. That's my analysis.
Let me push you one more time on that, because it's important, and I know it'll be some of the reaction to this interview. Why does your view matter rather than you being the impartial journalist simply assessing different opinions in Northern Ireland?
I'm not saying that my view does matter. It just happens to be my view. I was asked to give my view and that was it. And the BBC was happy that I gave my view. It bought into what we were trying to do in this particular programme, which is rather different, in fact, very different from the sort of programme that I would make. But I've always tried, in my 40-odd years of covering the conflict, to be analytical, to be objective and to be fair. And I don't think that I have abandoned those principles in making this particular programme. But when it comes to expressing a personal opinion, which is rare for BBC journalists,
exactly,
it is difficult. I was asked if I would be prepared to do that. And I said yes, if the BBC was prepared to let me do so. But there's no doubt that this is a personal opinion. Why does it matter? Well, it doesn't matter if people want to know what I think, having covered this conflict, as many of your colleagues and my colleagues have, although primarily from within Northern Ireland. If people are interested in my view, and that's really, really up to them, then that is my view. I'm not saying that my view is important.
Who did win the war then? Let me just remind people actually how you do pose this question in the actual documentary, who won the war.
So, what's my conclusion? Who really did win the war? Viewed through the prism of the present, it's clear that the British and the Unionist won, because the Union is secure and the IRA is no more. But nobody knows what the future may hold. The unimaginable has already happened, with Martin McGuinness up there at Stormont as Deputy First Minister and dining at Windsor Castle with the Queen. I wouldn't be surprised if at some stage in the long years ahead, a United Ireland did emerge.
I wonder, does it actually matter to a lot of people in this country who won the war now we have a peace process? I wonder, do they even want to contemplate it, Peter?
I think a lot of people do. And when I've spent the past 3 or 4 months in Belfast and people said, what are you doing? I said, I'm doing a documentary called Who Won the War. People say, that's really interesting. And then they give me their views. These are, cross-community views, unsolicited views. And they all have a view. The prevalent view is, nobody won or the people of Northern Ireland won. But on each side, you have a view which is reflective of the side that they come from or the organisation that they come from. So I think there is a wide range of opinion on it. And I think what we tried to do in the documentary was to try and focus on, you know, what has happened and where we are and where we are now and how we've got here. And the question that arises from that, well, in that case, who won? Tony Blair says in the interview I did with Mr. Blair that, you know, everybody won, the people of Northern Ireland won, which is true. I don't dissent from that, and I think what we have is a remarkable achievement by all sides, including, you know, the British. And again, another reason why I wanted to make the programme was just to remind people, many of whom, you know, the current generation who were born after the ceasefire, because the point of the programme is to mark the anniversaries of the two ceasefires 20 years ago, have no recollection, no knowledge of what we all have been through to get us to where we are. And I think it's important to remind people of that to help ensure that we never go there again.
And, you know, this is predominantly a phone-in show, and there would not be a week goes past where people would not phone this show and say, it wasn't a war, stop describing it that. This was a terrorist campaign. They were not soldiers, they were terrorists. So what do you think they were in what you describe as a war? Were they soldiers or terrorists?
I think they were insurgents. And I've always been very careful in the words that I use when I'm talking about different aspects of political violence. I have seldom referred to the IRA as terrorists or the loyalist paramilitaries as terrorists. I've referred to them on some occasions as, you know, terrorist organisations, depending on the actions that were carried out. I think that if you look at the history of Northern Ireland over the past, you know, 40, 45 years, it is redolent of similar insurgencies, quotes, terrorist campaigns that have been fought elsewhere over the years. And the result is not dissimilar to the result that other campaigns have had, where the so-called terrorists who have a political agenda reach a point where that political agenda or some of it is actually realised. The IRA have not got a united Ireland, and they may not get a united Ireland. The IRA or their successors or their comrades Sinn Féin, their view is that, you know, we won because we have equality, to which I put to Martin McGuinness. But the IRA wasn't fighting primarily for equality. The IRA was fighting to achieve a united Ireland. This you have not got. This, you know, Republicans have not got. And therefore, aren't you rewriting history by making out that the IRA was fighting for equality? Ergo, the IRA has won. To which, interestingly, and I think there's a lot to read in between the lines of what Mr. McGuinness and some of the other contributors say, he says, he wants to make it clear that although the IRA, you know, wanted to achieve equality, the main purpose of the IRA was to achieve a united Ireland. And it's interesting, as some of the contributors say, how, you know, both sides have interpreted the result. Basically, you know, the unionists, and this has always puzzled me, the unionists have never been able to grasp or articulate the fact that they won because the union is secure. And that's what they were fighting for politically and what the paramilitaries, the loyalist paramilitaries, were also
they
fighting
still to this
achieve.
Day don't feel like they've won.
No, they don't.
I'll tell you that right they, now. They don't. In fact,
I know that.
They feel they're losing a battle as
we speak.
Stephen,
I spent 4 months recently in Northern Ireland, and I've covered Twaddell, and I've covered the marches, and I've covered the flags protest, and that is clear in the programme, deep resentment, alienation that many in the loyalist community feel. There's no question.
Let's just hear some of this. The former hunger striker and Sinn Féin critic, Jared Hodgkins, has a very different take on if the IRA won the war.
Who won the war?
Oh, the British. We lost. We just didn't get our United Ireland. And now we're pretending that it wasn't about freedom, that it was really about equality. The IRA are too clever to tell the full truth of what was actually negotiated. And unionists are just too stupid to recognise the enormity of what they have achieved in bringing the IRA to a negotiated settlement which accepts the six-county state.
And then, Peter, here's what you say about loyalists.
The parade today reminds me of the parades I watched in the early 1970s, but with one big difference. The parades that I watched then were parades by Catholic nationalists and Republicans who were protesting about what they regarded as their status as second-class citizens. The irony is that today, the loyalists who are marching, the bands, their supporters here, now regard themselves as being second-class citizens. So there's a similarity, but a huge difference. Things seem to have gone full circle.
Now, that is so interesting, because there's essentially been a role reversal here.
Completely. And what you just heard me say, as I mentioned, you know, it wasn't a prepared piece. I just watched the march coming down past Twaddell and watched the robocops of the PSNI in their riot gear and, you know, very heavy police presence and protesters on one side from Ardoyne from North Belfast. And I just thought, this is just like the marches I saw 40 years ago. But the difference was, the tables have been turned since then, because those marches were marches by Catholics, Nationalists for Civil Rights. They were the underdogs. Loyalists were the top dogs, Unionists the top dogs. And now the thing's been turned on its head. And I think that's, you know, a major problem that still has to be resolved.
And where does the fault lie? Does it lie with the Loyalists themselves, that they're not intelligent enough to understand that they've won? Or has the message not been sold to them?
I think it's the latter. I don't think the message has been sold. I don't think it was ever sold as strongly as it might have been by David Trimble and his colleagues at the time of the Good Friday Agreement, because they didn't want to, you know, raise the stakes too high. But I think also the fact that the union is secure, which is what Loyalist unionists were fighting for, has been overcast by the alienation, the anger that they feel at the way in which they see their culture being eroded. So the fact that in the big picture, the union is secure, ergo, therefore, the unionists, the loyalists have won, is overshadowed by the deep feeling of resentment that loyalists feel, that their culture is being eroded. Yeah. And as Billy Hutchinson says in a part of the programme, you know, the war isn't over, that Republicans are still fighting the war and trying to erode and destroy our culture. And I think he speaks for a lot of loyalists when he says that.
Well, precisely. So what's the point of the union being secure if your culture isn't?
That's a very good question. The union is a political arrangement.
Exactly.
And that's what matters in the end. If you look at the history of Northern Ireland and the future of Northern Ireland and the attempts that have been made, many, many attempts, as you will know, Stephen, over the years to try and solve it, the result of the union being secure is the bedrock of the settlement and the bedrock of what may or may not happen in the years ahead.
So do you think, Peter, that that's the reality check that loyalists are going to have to stomach? That the union is secure, but they are going to have some of their culture eroded?
No,
have they got to just take that?
I don't think it
as
is.
As a price?
I don't think it is. I think what has to be recognised, loyalist culture has to be recognised. And part of the programme, I say, which I believe to be true, that today, unlike 40 years ago, nationalists feel secure in their own skins. You just got to look round Belfast, and that is quite clear. But I think also Republicans, Sinn Féin, have got to recognise that loyalism has a culture, unionism has a culture, and that has to be respected and recognised. And I don't think there is that recognition, that generous recognition of loyalist culture that is necessary if we are to resolve the problem. And really, it's very simple. It's simple to many people on the other side of the Irish Sea, which is, why can't Republicans or nationalists in North Belfast, in Ardoyne, let the march go past the area in which they live? And that's recognition of the culture. And that's the hurdle that I think, you know, both sides have got to overcome. The good thing, the positive thing that I saw happening when there was expected to be trouble at Twaddell on the 12th this year, you know, and I was there in the lead up and I was there on the 12th, there was no violence. It was controlled because there had been dialogue, there had been an agreement. And I said, and I say in the programme, you know, that is a good sign for the future. So that, you know, that has to be the way forward. And I think that, you know, Sinn Féin, Martin McGuinness...
There wasn't much of a dialogue between the Orange Men and the Nationalist residents.
No, that is true. That is true. But there was a result that led to a peaceful conclusion of that march. But to people, again, in England, Scotland, perhaps not so much Scotland, but England and Wales, they're just mystified by what appears to be a relatively small issue about where a parade can march. But here, given the history, it's a huge, huge issue for, you know, for loyalist and loyalism.
I wonder about people across the water, you know, in many different ways. But I wonder if they actually care about Northern Ireland, or indeed do they just think it's settled and that's it?
I think people in England have never quite understood, you know, what the conflict is about. You know, why are the Irish killing each other? Because the Irish are the Irish, is the sort of cliched view. And there has never been a real engagement on the part of the rest of the United Kingdom with the problems on this part of the United Kingdom. And Northern Ireland is still part of the United Kingdom, which has always slightly puzzled me, except, of course, when the IRA took its campaign to London and England, when
people actually
broke out, which, of course, is why they, you know, why they did that. I do think that people say to me, and I mentioned this in the film, you know, why are you going back to Northern Ireland? Because it's all settled, isn't it? To which I say, and I say in the film, settled, it is not. And, you know, your listeners know, your viewers know, that it is not settled because of what we see every day. And those are the problems that still remain, that have to be settled. And I think, you know, will be settled, but not without, you know, a fierce political debate.
I wonder, would the likes of David Cameron be as passionate on keeping Northern Ireland part of the UK as he was Scotland?
I don't think David Cameron... I think David... I can't speak for David Cameron. I asked to interview David Cameron because I think what he said about Bloody Sunday was remarkable and statesmanlike, and I wanted to talk to him about that and other things too. But he didn't want to be interviewed about Northern Ireland. I think his particular considerations are the balance of power at Westminster next time round. And there are those, you know, that handful, but critical handful, given the numbers game of Unionist MPs at Westminster, which is the problem that John Major had when he was in power, when he was kept in power by, you know, by the Unionist. But I think that John Major has got enough problems on his plate without worrying about Northern Ireland. And I think he would like to think that Northern Ireland, you know, is settled. But I think he knows, because he'll be told by, you know, by people whose job it is to tell him that, you know, it is not settled and not sorted. But I think he would prefer to keep his sort of distance from the issue at the moment.
Let's talk about you. What is your obsession with this place? You've been coming here for, what, four decades. Why does it matter to you so much?
Well, I don't think it's an obsession, Stephen. I mean, I've done many, 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 many other things besides coming to Belfast. I've always been fascinated by it because it's raw politics. It's a mixture of politics and violence, political violence. And I've watched the evolution of this conflict since I first came over here on Bloody Sunday in 1972, when I didn't even know where Londonderry was. I had to look at a map. I couldn't understand, because I actually arrived just after the killings. I arrived late on the evening of Bloody Sunday. And I felt guilty because I couldn't believe that, quotes, my soldiers, you know, being a Brit, had been responsible for what the people I spoke to in the Bogside, you know, in the day after Bloody Sunday, when I went round knocking on doors, said that they had shot dead in cold blood innocent civil rights marchers. I couldn't believe that, you know, my soldiers had done that. And I also felt guilty because I didn't know why, you know, what is this all about? Why are there marches for civil rights? Why is the army opening fire on civil rights marches? And I was a young journalist, very naive at the time, and I thought I'd better find out. And I spent the next 40 years trying to find out. So I suppose you could call it an obsession, but I would prefer to regard it as being something which had always fascinated me, both as a citizen, because Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. People forget that, you know. Yeah. All the fuss about Scotland referendum. Northern Ireland is an equally important part of the UK as Scotland, which, again, people in England tend to forget, partly because Scotland is contiguous to England. Northern Ireland is, you know, a sea journey away. And the more I covered it, and in particular looking at, you know, the impact of violence on politics, the more interested and fascinated I became, and the more I got to know people on all sides, and that's critical. I've always tried to be objective in my coverage, and being in a position developed over many years of being able to talk both on and off the record to people from all sides and gain their trust, you can get an insight into what is actually happening and what makes Northern Ireland unique from a journalist's point of view, is that this seismic conflict, because that's what it was in geographic terms, is taking place in part of the United Kingdom. You have access to it because the area is so small and the sides are clearly defined, and you can go, and I'm not the only journalist who was able to do it, you can go from one side to the other, and if they trust you, and it's a big if, and that trust has to be earned, won and maintained, you can actually get inside it and you can begin to analyse and explain to people, because essentially that's what I regard my job as being, to try and answer many, if not all of the questions that people want to have answered and be informed about.
And that young journalist that came here all of those years ago is receiving a BAFTA now for your services to journalism. You should be really proud.
No, I'm... yes, I am proud. I am proud. And I know this is a cliche, because everybody says this when they win an award, but it's not just me. It's and the really nice thing about the BAFTA is that BAFTA are hosting a dinner, and I've been able to invite about 60 of my colleagues going way back to my time in the 70s to now, and some of your colleagues from Northern Ireland are coming, who with whom I made the programme. And it's also a way of saying thank you to them, because I've been fortunate to work with a whole range of brilliant people, most of whom, many of whom have actually become my friends. So, it means a great deal. I mean, I've been nominated for a BAFTA on four occasions, but never actually won it. So to actually win one at the end is actually very special. And it'll be quite an emotional and moving evening as I look round and see all those people with whom I worked over so many years and remember what they did, and also what they've taught me. I know I've been doing this for a long time, but it's an ongoing learning process. You learn something from every film that you make, not just about the issues, but about the way in which you make the film.
Just one final question about you. Your enthusiasm, when you sit here in front of me now, and I'm not, I hope this doesn't come across as patronising, because I mean this genuinely. Your enthusiasm and your passion, honestly, it just makes me think, my goodness, am I passionate enough? And you've been at this many, many years. Does it scare you that there might be a day that you might not be able to do what you do because it's so much of who you are and what you are?
That's a very good question, and perceptive as ever, Stephen. You're right. Yes, it does. It does. When earlier this year, I was awarded the Royal Television Society's Lifetime Achievement Award. And at the end, when I had to make a speech at 11:30 at night, would you believe, I held up the gong and said the date, Peter Taylor, 14th of February, whenever it was. And then I said, I hope this isn't a sell-by date. Yeah. So that, that is something I'm conscious of. I can't go on doing it forever. But, I've no wish to retire. Retirement is not really in my hands. That's in the hands of others.
Peter, I could talk to you all day, but we will leave it there. Congratulations on your BAFTA, sir. It's been a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you, Stephen.